From KTOO News, I'm Jeremy Shea. A Juneau man who was reported as missing turned himself in to Juneau police this morning. Police say Lucas Schneider walked into the station downtown at around 4 in the morning. He had two arrest warrants out for pretrial probation and parole violations, so he was arrested and taken to Lemon Creek Correctional Center. Schneider has been a resident of Juneau's Glory Hall for several months. He was reported missing last Friday. Last week, Glory Hall staff and residents searched for Schneider in the Echo Cove area, where he said he was going camping. They did not end up finding him. It's not clear how he got from Echo Cove back to Juneau. The Glory Hall is working to contact Schneider's family to let them know he's safe. U.S. Forest Service is proposing to restore land on an island in the Tongass National Forest that has been logged in past decades. As Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, the federal agency wants this 23,000 acres of developed land to match the wilderness area that surrounds it.
Cube Cove is on the northwest side of Admiralty Island. The area was heavily logged, mostly by clear-cut in the 1980s and 90s by She Attica, Sitka's Native Corporation. The U.S. Forest Service bought the land for just over $18 million, completing the deal in 2020. She Attica had done some reclamation work after the logging, but the Forest Service wants to finish it up.
Admiralty Island is a special and unique place, every inch of it anyways.
That's Marcy Johnson, a wildlife and fisheries biologist with the Forest Service.
Certainly some unique characteristics with the concentration of brown bears and eagle nests, and a lot of intact old growth forests throughout the island.
Before the federal purchase, it was the largest privately owned land surrounded by a federal wilderness area. It's now joined that protected area, known as Kootsnuwu Wilderness, which makes up most of Admiralty Island. She Attica did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Because of past logging, there are many remaining roads, bridges, and culverts. The Forest Service proposes removing three large steel bridges and culverts that would affect fish passage. They also want to remove or modify some of the roadbeds that might affect water flow. Johnson says there is a coho salmon run and trout in the streams.
So eventually, this type of infrastructure does fail and it could become a fish passage issue and water quality issue.
The federal agency is also proposing to thin some of the new growth trees to allow space for larger ones to grow, especially around waterways.
When you don't have these large trees growing around these streams, you don't have that temperature control, and you also don't have this large wood material that ends up in the creeks as good fish habitat.
There are two federally managed recreational cabins on site that see visitors. Johnson says that the driving force behind the restoration project is preserving the wild character of the land, now and in the future.
Providing that wilderness experience in, say, a visitor in 300 years is still important, too.
A few years ago, a pilot project removed a large culvert on a fish-bearing stream near a lake in the area. It was run by the Southeast Alaska Watershed Coalition with help from an Angoon youth program. The village of Angoon is south of Cube Cove on the western shore. Its residents have lived on Admiralty Island as long as anyone knows, and subsistence fish and hunt there. Charles James is the tribal administrator.
We put up fish to last us the winter. We can our fish, we smoke it.
James doesn't know if any residents go near the logged areas now, but he says restoring the land makes sense.
I think it would be nice to have those trees and stuff growing back and get all that stuff out of there.
The Forest Service plans to do more fieldwork this summer to fine-tune the details of the project, such as what tools and equipment will be needed. They are taking public comment on the proposal through July 22nd. They expect all the work to be completed within 5 years. It's unknown how much the restoration will cost and what partnerships might help fund it, but it's been identified as a priority project by the Tongass National Forest. Reporting in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
The international shipping industry is a huge contributor to global greenhouse gases. All those container ships that cross the Pacific from, say, China to the United States, they're largely run on petroleum. The industry emits about a billion tons of CO2 into the atmosphere every year, so a group of researchers are looking into what it would take to transition to using zero-emission fuels, and what they found could put the Aleutian Islands right at the center of it all. KUCB's Theo Greenlee has more.
It started with a problem. How can we ship containers across the Pacific Ocean using renewable resources? Researchers from the International Council on Clean Transportation have been trying to figure that out, and they found a potential solution. Hydrogen. Elise Georgeff is an associate researcher with the nonprofit.
How many container ships across the Trans-Pacific corridor could make it on liquid hydrogen? And it was about 43%. They could be powered by hydrogen using fuel cells.
Fuel cells are sort of like batteries. But instead of holding a charge from another source, they create a charge from the fuel they store. Georgeff says her group found that almost half of the ships that travel from China to California could make the exact same trip with hydrogen fuel cells. But what about the other half? They would need a midway point for the ships to refuel along the way.
We found, yes, like 99% of the ships that couldn't make the Pacific route before, if they just added one refueling stop, just like a little, gas stop on the way, they could obtain the route.
Most of the international ships crossing from east to west follow the same path. And Unalaska and Adak in the Aleutian Islands, they're right in the middle, about halfway through one of the world's busiest shipping lanes. It's what some are calling a green corridor.
So we're hypothesizing because of their strategic location, they could be a first player in this green corridor that's already been talked about between China and the United States.
The United Nations has called for global leaders to work towards decarbonization of maritime shipping. And Georgeff says Alaska is poised to be a key player in that future. The Biden administration has pledged to work with the UN to develop hydrogen and renewable energies in the American shipping industry. And this international study estimates a market of more than $1 billion a year if the Aleutians become a full-fledged hydrogen hub. Reporting in Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
An Alaska Geothermal Energy Company can now secure a prospecting permit for Augustine Island in Lower Cook Inlet. A June 30th final finding from the state's Division of Oil and Gas means GeoAlaska LLC can sign for a two-year permit to look for energy on the south side of the active volcano. That's where company CEO Eric Anderson believes the geology shows promise. He said the company will be applying for a permit at Augustine and has already started bringing on geothermal energy experts onto the project. Geothermal energy can be harnessed from the heat below the Earth's surface in the form of steam or water. It's a renewable resource, since there's no shortage of heat there. And like other renewables, it can be used to heat homes or generate electricity. Before it starts to drill, GeoAlaska needs to know whether a 3,000-acre parcel at the volcano has real energy potential. GeoAlaska plans to lease land from the state to look into the resource. And in Anchorage, the Anchorage Assembly yesterday approved spending $2.8 million to shelter homeless people at the Aviator Hotel in town. According to officials with Mayor Dave Bronson's office, there are currently 191 homeless people using 166 rooms at the hotel. They say the money will pay for up to 225 rooms from July 1st to the end of September. The World Eskimo Indian Olympics began this morning at the Big Dipper Arena in Fairbanks. The event is looking more like it did before the first pandemic year when the 2020 games were canceled. KUAC's Robin reports.
Organizers say they have dozens more athletes attending this year than last. Gina Kallik is on the board of directors of the World Eskimo Indian Olympics. As she walks into the arena, she attributes the increase to wider use of COVID-19 vaccines and loosening of COVID restrictions in the state and locally.
We're following the Fairbanks North Star boroughs right now. Hope that'll stay for the next 4 days and not change.
Kallik says they're still encouraging everyone who attends to be current with COVID-19 vaccinations, wear a mask, and stay apart from each other.
Especially if they're going to be in close contact like some of our games where you're right up next to your competitor.
They would like public attendees to be cautious as well.
Last year we limited the floor to participants only, but this year we actually have some extra vendor tables that will be down on the floor so the public will be able to come in and visit those tables, and then elders will have a place to sit on the floor closer to the action if they choose to do so.
It seems there's a pent-up demand for vendor space. Kallik says all the spots were filled and there are still vendors on a waiting list. There are three sewn Ugruk skin blankets on the floor of the Big Dipper and a fourth that is still stiff and curved up at the ends because it just came off an umiak. It will need to be softened before it can be used for the game's signature event, the Eskimo blanket toss. Stepping around them on Tuesday are volunteers. Some help for a day or two, and some come year after year, like Mark Rafe-Snyder, who, even though he has no native heritage, came up from Mannheim, Pennsylvania.
Because we enjoy coming up and sharing their culture with them, and this is my seventh year up here, so we've known a lot of people over the years and enjoy seeing them every year and the friendships, and just love being up here.
He was recruited with his wife, Laura Rafe-Snyder, and daughter, Peyton Rafe-Snyder, and now gets others to volunteer.
My wife and me were sitting in church, and in the bulletin, they needed volunteers for up here. Now it's 2015, so we've been up ever since.
Kalik leaves the arena to check on the tent set up on the field behind the building, where they hope to stage as many games as possible outdoors.
We have, with the help of the Rasmussen Foundation, been able to purchase our own portable gymnasium floor. So we have a wooden basketball court-type floor that belongs to WIO. That is what our athletes will be competing on this year.
Kalik says it's nice to feature the women competing in the WIO Queen competition outdoors, so they can have a little breeze around the furs and moose hide of their traditional regalia, rather than the heat of a Fairbanks July, in addition to hundreds of spectators inside the Big Dipper Arena. This year, the organization is helping an Anchorage 6-year-old leukemia patient who needs a bone marrow transplant. Tiberius Newbill is a Nupiak Black and White. WIO was approached by the organization Be the Match to help his family find a bone marrow donor.
And so they'll be set up every day in the evening taking DNA swabs. It's just a cheek swab to try and find him a match. They might find someone in his immediate or extended family that we don't know about. Or anyone can be swabbed and be tested, because it doesn't matter if you're a relative or not. It doesn't matter if you're the same ethnicity or not. You could be the match.
The daytime events go between 10 a.m. and 2 or 3 in the afternoon and are free. WIO charges for the indoor evening events. The schedule and prices are on the website, weio.org. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
That's it for the KTOO News Update for Wednesday, July 13th, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.